From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Steve Reddish, filling in for Kim Lewis. Joining me today, journalist Dan Revive from Moment Magazine and VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Welcome, Dan and Steve.
Pleasure to be here.
It's really great. Thanks, Steve. And Steve.
Among the issues we will consider today, 10 months after Russia started attacking Ukraine, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says it is up to Ukraine to, in his words, stop senseless resistance at any moment. If Ukraine doesn't meet Russia's demands, Lavrov said, quote, the issue will be decided by the Russian army. China lifts its mandatory COVID quarantine for people arriving from outside the country, but ending the country's zero COVID policy is reportedly testing the limits of China's medical care system. The January 6th committee of the U.S. House of Representatives wrapped up its work with the release of its final report, more than 800 pages that placed the blame for the 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol squarely at the feet of ex-President Donald Trump. And while time left in 2022 is fast slipping away, so many issues will carry over to 2023. What can we look forward to in the coming year? Those are the issues. So let's get started with Russia's war on Ukraine. Sergei Lavrov, Russia's foreign minister, says it's up to Ukraine to determine how long the fighting will last, telling Russia's state news agency TASS that Ukraine knows Russia's proposals for his, in his words, the demilitarization and denazification of Ukrainian territory, adding if Ukraine does not meet Russia's demands, the issue will, quote, be decided by the Russian army. Lavrov's statement came 2 days after Russian President Vladimir Putin said he is ready to, in his words, negotiate some acceptable outcomes, saying it is Ukraine that will not come to the table. An advisor to Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky said it is Russia that does not want negotiations. Ukraine's president said Russia can stop the war it began anytime by withdrawing troops, restoring Ukraine's territorial integrity. And Ukraine's foreign minister says he wants a UN peace summit and has called on UN members to strip Russia of its seat on the Security Council, saying Russia never completed the legal process to be admitted to the UN. Dan, where does the situation stand? Which direction is this going?
Well, I'm noticing that both sides are using the word peace and are raising the possibility of an end to the war, which began with a Russian invasion of Ukraine on February 24th. On the other hand, their definitions of what peace could be are entirely different, right? The Ukrainian government, led by Volodymyr Zelensky, says that Russia has to leave all Ukrainian territory. Zelensky even means the territory seized by Russia in the year 2014, including Crimea. As for the Russians, well, as you were saying, Russia is calling for a total surrender by Ukraine. So we don't seem to be closer to the end of the war. And meantime, Russia is still firing missiles over a long distance at Ukrainian cities, including the capital, Kyiv, including a city that the Ukrainians recaptured, Kherson. Civilians are dying every day, certainly on the Ukrainian side. The United States, of course, takes Ukraine's side and is delivering even more weapons since Zelensky's surprise visit here in Washington when he addressed Congress. And President Joe Biden said that even the Patriot anti-missile system will be delivered to Kyiv. And so, again, no sign that the war is going to end. And we might be developing a stalemate, which suggests that it goes on and on. Pentagon officials at the American Department of Defense, they estimate that around 100,000 Russians and 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed or wounded since the start of the war. Ukraine recently admitted around 13,000 Ukrainian soldiers have died, and it's just getting worse. So I just don't see the end of it, but I do see the United States and its allies still standing firmly together against Russia's aggression.
As Dan pointed out, there may be this rhetoric about peace, but the reality on the ground is nobody's talking about a ceasefire. The Russians are escalating their attacks on Ukrainian cities. The Ukrainians themselves are standing firm. They're showing no evidence that they will compromise whatsoever in getting back the territory taken by Russia. So it is winter. We expected things would slow down on the ground if we're talking about troops on the ground. But the missile attacks by Russia are continuing. And really, it's probably going to be a situation where this continues until one side or both sides runs out of materiel and money.
Is there danger as far as the Republican takeover of the House of Representatives that's coming next week here in the United States, as far as that kind of funding from the United States continuing to help the Ukrainians?
There are certainly Republicans who want to look at the budgets much closer, what is being spent, what is being sent. You're always going to have waste and corruption when there's this many billions of dollars going to another country during wartime. There are a few Republicans, especially in the House, who would want to cut off money totally, but they don't have the power to really make much of a difference. And I would say the majority of Democrats and Republicans are in consensus that they will continue to fund Ukraine. It won't get everything it wants or needs, but we can expect the same sort of pace.
Well, keeping in mind that the Republican Party is about to be the majority in the House of Representatives, it's in the first week of January that the new Congress is sworn in. I'd say a lot more questions will be asked. And frankly, one of the things that the Republicans in the House want to do is try to highlight failures or mistakes made by President Joe Biden and by his Democratic Party, which still will hold the United States Senate. And so I do expect a lot of questions and a lot of doubts. I agree with Steve Herman that I don't think the Republicans will stop the U.S. aid, but the doubts could ripple into the NATO alliance, could possibly encourage Russia to think that the U.S. will not continue forever to support Ukraine at a high level. And so there might be some impact. It's really a different Washington, D.C. Than it's been the last 2 years, when the Democratic Party, frankly, would support almost everything that the Biden White House was doing.
That's Putin's only viable bet, is to hope that there's a dissolution of the unity among the NATO allies, and that there would be this sort of split in the U.S. Congress. It's a long bet. There are long odds on that. Everyone's been showing resilience among the allies. So it doesn't look to be a very good bet for Putin at this point.
So far, you mentioned, Dan, the Patriot missile batteries that are going, just one battery going over to Ukraine. It seems like the United States and the NATO allies are giving Ukraine everything it needs to defend itself, but very little to try and take the action toward and be offensive. Is there going to be some sort of change, or do you see Ukraine just continuing to take the kind of battering from Russia that it has taken so far?
Well, officially, the United States and its allies are helping Ukraine defend itself and defend its territory. And the truth is that the United States is discouraging Ukraine from attacking Russian territory. Apparently, the belief is that if Russia feels that its own homeland is in danger, then there is the possibility of even President Vladimir Putin deciding to use nuclear weapons, which is the frightening thought that's been around for months, of course. So I don't see any change, except that I think the U.S. is certainly willing to help the Ukrainians shoot down a lot more incoming missiles to the degree that that is possible. It's not that easy if Russia decides to send a swarm of drones made in Iran that maybe only cost about $1,000 each, And then Ukraine would have to fire those U.S.-provided Patriot missiles that cost, $50,000, $80,000 per launch. I'm afraid a lot of those explosive drones are still going to get through.
President Biden has made it clear he does not want this to escalate to World War III. And as Dan pointed out, Ukraine will get much of what it needs to defend itself, but not to take the offensive because that potentially could escalate the war, leading to a world war.
Moving on to our next subject, China and COVID. People in China are busily booking travel overseas after China this week announced it will lift mandatory COVID quarantine for travelers arriving from outside the country. Another step in the recent unraveling of China's strict zero COVID policy, thanks in part to unprecedented street protests of the policy in many parts of the country. But ending the country's zero COVID policy is reportedly testing the limits of China's medical care system. The New York Times, Washington Post analyzed videos and posts on Chinese social media sites to get a snapshot of what is happening. Overwhelmed healthcare facilities in major East Coast cities, patients being treated in hallways, doctors and nurses working while infected with COVID. China says only about 30% of those 60 years and up have been vaccinated. And right now, a door-to-door campaign is underway to get them a shot, paying them to do so. So China's COVID coming out, I guess, coming out of a zero COVID policy, what does that mean for the next several months as far as China's ability to handle this and any kind of spillover into the world economy?
What an amazing change in China's policy. Instead of having a lockdown whenever there was an indication anywhere that somebody, even one person, had COVID-19, now instead China is refusing to lock down, apparently a move to boost the Chinese economy after nearly 3 years of almost paralysis. On the other hand, it is reliably reported that tens of millions of people in China have gotten COVID-19 just this past month, and it is spreading. Out of concern, the United States and other countries have imposed a new rule. Anyone flying in from the People's Republic of China will have to have a COVID test before the flight. That's the kind of measure that was lifted almost everywhere on Earth, and now there's a fear that new variants of COVID-19 could be in China and could spread to other countries because people do travel in the modern world. So it's a really big change. And I think it means that COVID-19 is far from over as a pandemic around the world.
Yeah, it's quite ironic because this all started with the virus coming out of China and spreading to the United States and other countries. What it really means with this 180-degree reversal in policy, the Chinese realizing, the government, that is, that they were not going to be able to sustain the containment, the significant cost it was having on the economy. And now it looks like they've made the decision consciously or subconsciously to essentially sacrifice lives to try to turn around the economy, just try to get this through the population, which is really not vaccinated. You're going to lose the elderly, the immunocompromised, but get it through the country so that we can get the factories back open. That seems to be the very brutal decision that the Chinese Communist Party is making.
China has its own vaccine and has not used the same ones that Western countries are using. And I think it's obvious they, instead of vaccination, they instead nearly 3 years ago chose the lockdowns and the shutdowns and forcing people to stay at home. And there's no way to really turn that around quickly.
Okay, time to take a break. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you'd like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/issues. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two, and then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, Moment Magazine's Dan Revive and VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Next Friday marks 2 years since the attack on the U.S. Capitol by supporters of then-President Donald Trump. The House of Representatives Committee investigating how it happened has now released its final report, more than 800 pages, detailing the different ways Trump and his allies allegedly tried to overturn the 2020 election and keep him in office. Also, the committee sent a referral to the Justice Department to prosecute Trump on 4 criminal charges, including inciting an insurrection. Steve, Trump is already announced as a candidate for president in the 2024 election. He continues to falsely claim the 2020 election was stolen from him. Where does this go now?
Well, with the change in power in Congress, the Democrats will no longer have this committee in the House that was looking in to what happened on January 6th. So that's gone. But the Justice Department does have this special prosecutor, in essence, now. And we can certainly expect some charges to come out of that. The big question, of course, is whether the former president, now running for president again, as you noted, will be charged with anything, and what effect that would possibly have on the 2024 election. There are some indications. I've been doing reporting that shows that Republicans, to some degree, are losing enthusiasm for Donald Trump to come back, looking at alternatives such as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is also quite conservative. But if Trump is to be charged, is he able to use that as a rallying point and to really energize that base again that made him president in 2016? So there will be legal decisions made, but there are significant political ramifications to all of this as well.
I find here in Washington, everybody's talking about whether Donald Trump will face criminal charges. Right, there were important findings from the January 6th committee. There was a small section, at least, about security failures on that day, almost 2 years ago. Why was the mob able to get to the Capitol building and then into the Capitol building on the very day that Congress had a job of confirming the election results? So a small section there on security failure. So we do expect changes in the future every 4 years on the day that Congress has to confirm a presidential election. I think there will be more security around the Capitol building. But most of the report was trying to prove that Donald Trump incited all the events by refusing to confirm that he lost the election to Joe Biden, by having meetings all the time, thinking of various angles and ways to challenge the election results. And then, according to the committee, inciting an insurrection, one of the 4 criminal charges that they suggested. If Trump is charged, it could help him politically, or it might knock him out of the political race. Frankly, people don't know, but it's a fascinating question, and everybody's talking about it.
As long as Donald Trump is still running for president, whatever comes out of the Justice Department, whether they choose to indict or not to indict, is going to be very big news.
Yeah, there's another presidential election coming in 2024. Trump says that he's running. Frankly, Joe Biden says he intends to run. We could have a rematch of Trump versus Biden. And what happened when Trump refused to accept the results from 2020 is sure to be a topic. If for some reason, you know, Trump decides not to run and the Justice Department decides not to charge him, then he could fade into people's memory. But there's no sign of that. It's still a big subject here.
Dan, what I'm detecting from going out into remote areas of the country where there's been a lot of support for Donald Trump previously, and then in urban areas where Joe Biden had huge support in 2020, is sort of a consensus. If Republicans and Democrats seem to agree on anything, it's like, please give us some other candidates besides 2 white guys in their 80s. So There is a desire, I think, for a change, but it does appear, as you noted, Donald Trump seems to be running in part because Joe Biden is running and he wants a rematch and wants to vanquish Biden and erase that stain on his record. And Joe Biden has indicated that he will run privately to people because he claims he defeated Donald Trump before and he may need to do it again.
Let's move on to our final issue. As the hours left in 2022 slip away, its controversies, its global issues will stick with us going into 2023. COVID will still be with us. Russia will still be attacking Ukraine. The special counsel will still be investigating January 6th. There's climate change. There are economic warning signs for a global recession. Let's analyze what the new year portends for us. Dan, in Congress, a newly elected Republican is about to be seated next week in the new Congress with a resume that is rather false.
Well, we're talking about George Santos, a Republican who's in his 30s, so a relatively young politician in New York State on Long Island. And after he won the election in November, the press, the media started to look into his background, and the New York Times first broke the story, and then others got onto the story that George Santos isn't everything he claimed to be. He didn't really graduate from any university. He didn't really work at some of the major investment banks of the United States. There are questions even as to whether he's really Jewish, which is something he was using in his campaign as a positive in the congressional district where he was running. So Santos won the election. He has now apologized if anybody felt misled. He said he was embellishing his resume, but claims that lots of American politicians do that. And he certainly said that he intends to still be a member of Congress and do his great job with the new Republican majority in the House of Representatives. On the other hand, investigators, including New York state officials and it's reported federal investigators are looking into where the money came from for his campaign. And so I'd have to say that we're going to have this unexpected political scandal of one Republican member, you know, under scrutiny. We'll see if the Republican Party stands with him or not.
The Republican Jewish Committee, which is a powerful group in the party, has essentially disowned him, says he'll never be welcome at any events of theirs again, that he totally misled them and used this for political gain. You know, it's one thing to lie on your resume, perhaps, as a politician. It's another thing to claim that you're a member of an ethnic group or a religion that you are not. That seems to have caused more outrage than all the other falsehoods that he had claimed before.
Steve, if I can just add something as the new year is beginning, there are questions here in the United States about politics in general, about whether this country is so divided that maybe the U.S. won't be a success in the new year. As you said, Steve Reddish, there's fear even of a recession around the world with central banks, including the Federal Reserve here in the U.S., raising interest rates, making it tougher for consumers and stock market investors. We have a lot of question marks, but of course, that's why we always keep an ear on the news, because there's always a lot going on and we don't know how it'll turn out.
Well, Steve, you raised climate change and said it's not going away. And what we have been seeing are these storms that are happening more frequently and being more vicious, the more extremes in the weather. And so that is the big question mark. And it's not something that's easy to predict just how devastating some storms may be in 2023. So I think we'll be covering that as well.
Well, that's all the time we have for now. My thanks to Moment Magazine's Dan Revive and VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. I'm Steve Reddish. Kim Lewis will be back next week for another edition of Issues in the News.